From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Washington State is facing a fiscal cliff of its own next year when the legislature reconvenes. Once again, there's a budget shortfall. And there's also a Supreme Court ruling that the state is not fulfilling its paramount constitutional duty to fund basic education. That could be very expensive to comply with. Central to the discussion will be the House Ways and Means Committee, the Taxing and Spending Panel. Gary Alexander is the ranking Republican of the House Ways and Means Committee. He represents Washington's 20th district, which includes Lewis County and part of South Thurston County. Democrat Ross Hunter is chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. He represents Washington's 48th district, which includes parts of Redmond, Kirkland, and Bellevue. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ross.
Ross Hunter, let's start with you. A fiscal cliff may be a little strong, but what is the size of the budget shortfall you're going to be facing even before you begin to address the issue of education funding?
Well, the forecast that the Revenue Forecast Council will adopt tomorrow, absent sort of set of new information that we're likely to get, which I don't think will make big changes, will show about a $500 million shortfall for the next two-year budget. The current one will be balanced, but the next one will be about a $500 million short. But that assumes that we would spend the rainy day fund, and it assumes that we would not have an ending fund balance, which is the money that you leave in the bottom of the checking account in case something comes up, like a bad fire season or a bad estimate of something. And you'd probably have about a $1.3, $1.4 billion problem if you assumed those things. And then you have to look at what the costs for the education improvements that the court is calling for in the McCleary decision, which will range somewhere between $1 and maybe $1.9 billion for the same biennium. So you're in the $3 to $3.5 billion problem range.
Gary Alexander, do you agree with those estimates on what it might take to fulfill the requirements of the McCleary decision, that the state's inadequately funding basic education?
Well, I somewhat agree, but I think the number will be closer to about, for the combination of our revenue projections versus our current obligation expenditures plus the education funding, about closer to about $2 billion. Still a daunting number, but one that I believe is approachable, and one that I believe we can manage into the as we get forth and deliberate next January.
$2 billion, $3 billion, Ross Hunter. How does this compare to the kind of budget problems you faced in previous biennia?
It's a smaller number in terms of the shortfall, but the set of options that we have is more limited than it's been in the past. So, you know, we've made a lot of the cuts that you could make. You know, we've reduced our employee count in the general fund by, we actually have fewer employees than we did a decade ago with 1 million more residents. We've taken $11 billion out of our pension obligations. We've made a lot of the kinds of changes that we think we could make, and now we're looking at more difficult changes. The Affordable Care Act has put severe restrictions on the changes that we can make in the Medicaid arena. So we're sort of trying to figure out exactly where you would make the cuts. In some ways, it'll be a more difficult project than the last couple of budgets, you know, budgets that we've had bipartisan agreement on.
Gary Alexander, do you agree that the low-hanging fruit has been plucked and it's going to be quite a bit harder to deal with your budget shortfall this year?
Well, I think that, you know, talk about, yeah, I think that we, you know, we've dealt with the areas that seem to be, lower on the list of potential impacts. But I still believe there is significant room for us to look at and prioritize where our spending needs to be. And we really haven't, with any kind of extensiveness, looked at the opportunities to contract out services that could be performed better by the private sector or the nonprofit sector. So I still believe there's room for reforms, there's room for opportunities for us to prioritize and do that with a responsible outcome.
Does contracting services out get you anywhere close to these figures that we're talking about, $2 to $3 billion?
Look at what types of services we could potentially contract out. I think more so in the area of where we could look at reforms, where we could look at what the responsible prioritization is. You know, we did that last year in the Republican House attempting to come up with a budget that was prioritized, protected our most vulnerable populations, and tried to meet our education obligations. And I believe that I'm committed to doing that again, including the responsibilities to the McCleary decision.
Now, you're going to be dealing, of course, with a new governor. And during his campaign, Jay Inslee said he wouldn't need to raise taxes for education. He said his plans to strengthen the economy and cut health care costs would free up the necessary funds for education. Do you agree that that's possible, Gary Alexander?
I do agree it's possible, but I may be speaking from a minority position when it comes to the recommendations that come out of the Education Funding Task Force. I believe that the majority position will be one of new tax revenues to pay for that obligation. In fact, they've, I think, pretty much have indicated that they're not only going to talk about just meeting the obligation of Education Funding Task Force, but they're going to come up with a plan to also treat that budget deficit that starts out before we even talk about the McCleary decision.
Ross Hunter, fellow Democrat Chris Gregoire, said that Jay Inslee's plan would not free up enough money to pay for improving education. She said that new revenue is imperative. What do you think?
Well, I haven't seen specifics in a plan that would enable you to meet any of the goals. And this is true of both gubernatorial candidate plans. I think it's typical of gubernatorial candidate budget white papers, is that there are assumptions that, you know, you could possibly imagine them coming true, but you have to have a very generous imagination. I mean, I think we're going to have a hard time making, kind of managing the growth rates in the areas of the budget that are driven by caseloads. In other words, our Medicaid, our senior population, our low-income seniors are have an entitlement to nursing home services and other, and that population is growing more quickly than the rest of the budget, and that's driven by federal law. So our ability to change that is pretty limited. On the growth side, the economic growth numbers are not attractive enough to get you to the point where you could make make the kind of budget that we need to have balance actually balance at any time in the short term. The growth in the budget here is driven by national trends, not by local trends. So when we look at our revenue forecast, the biggest driver for it is national GDP, which is not something that any action that we take here in Washington changes. It's what happens with the national economy. And we're frankly very concerned about the federal fiscal cliff, could actually drop us into a recession and cost us billions of dollars. And the changes that are going on in Europe could drop the whole world into another recession, which, again, could have significant downside risk for our budget.
Last Tuesday, Tim Iman's latest measure requiring a supermajority of two-thirds to pass tax increases easily got approval by voters. But the constitutionality of the supermajority measure has been challenged, and that's still undecided. It's before the state Supreme Court. If the high court throws it out, would either of you or both of you still abide by it, since voters have repeatedly voted in favor of a supermajority? What about you, Ross Hunter?
Well, I don't support the two-thirds majority, and I'll go back to Alexander Hamilton's writing in the Federalist Papers about how it creates pertinacious minorities, where you can have 17 senators can block block sort of reasonable actions by the body. He called them corrupt juntas. The language from the 18th century is perhaps a little richer than we would use today, but it's I don't support it. I think it's unconstitutional. We will see what happens when the Supreme Court rules, but currently we have a Superior Court ruling that says that the two-thirds requirement is unconstitutional. The 1053 and the 1185 that passed this year would meet the same test, would be equally unconstitutional.
Hey, Gary Alexander, how about you? If the Supreme Court should throw out this initiative and say it's unconstitutional to require a supermajority to pass taxes, is that going to influence your decisions in the upcoming legislative session?
Well, I think that looking from the number of people that responded to the Washington public policy from both Republicans and Democrats, it said they supported the two-thirds the additional responsibilities. I believe that if that court throws it out, we're going to have enough votes to actually make it a constitutional change. And I do believe it's the people of our state have very strongly indicated they want a higher threshold for new taxes than they do for general policy decisions.
Hey, thanks to both of you for taking the time. Gary Alexander, ranking Republican on the House Ways and Means Committee. Democrat Ross Hunter, chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. You're listening to KUOW 94.9 Seattle.